don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
I gotta do right before they call me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today's January 11th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight with our special guest, Ms. Cynthia Miller, who is also the author of In Rare Form. And we're going to hear her story tonight, not only get to know Cynthia as an author, but get to know Cynthia as a person. She's gone through a whole lot, and her message is to everyone that there's that you just have to look up and that you can get out of the darkness. And before we introduce her, let me introduce to you my co-host, Boyd. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I would just like to thank everybody for calling into the show every Wednesday and thanking everybody who's supported us out through all the year of 2011 and into 2012. And just want to thank our special guest tonight, Ms. Cynthia, for coming on the radio show and to spread her message and her testimony. And just want to take a 1 second to thank my homeboy, C. Murder, that used to be with No Limit, Master P Brother, for giving me a call tonight. And, we just want to send much love to C. Murder and appreciate him for checking in tonight with me. So without further ado, we'd like to pass the mic over to Ms. Cynthia for her to formally introduce herself.
Hi, Boyd and Lucinda. This is Cynthia. How are you tonight?
Oh, we're great.
Doing great. Welcome. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to actually spread my message as much as I possibly can.
And you're doing that. You're doing a lot of speaking engagements and a lot of interviews. I see that. That's great.
Yes. I think that it's important that women and also men are able to hear the stories of real people to find out exactly that there is a way out. And so that's my main objective, because I would like more people to see their way out.
Right. And that's how we do it here on the Streets Don't Love You Back show. I almost said the Keep It Real show, baby.
That's our other show. That's the TV show. You should get twisted up, Ms. Cynthia. You feel me? Because we keep it real all around the board.
But pretty much we keep it real on the Streets Don't Love You Back show, and that's what we do. We talk to real people. We get the real story, the truth, the way it really is out here, and that's how we're trying to educate people, by hearing the real stories, by relating to somebody else that's gone through something so horrific that you can't imagine that anybody may have ever gone through, and know that there's a way to heal from that, a way to get over that, and a way to, get through it. And so, we appreciate all of our guests coming on and telling the real.
Right. So we would like for you to start off, Cynthia, by breaking it down to the people who you are, where you come from, and what led up to the Rare book.
Okay, well, my name's Cynthia. I'm actually born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. I also lived in Oklahoma and California. Several years ago in the mid-80s, my children became victims to a very horrific crime. And in the middle of them, after I gave them everything that I had when this happened to them, because I wanted them to succeed, and they are very successful today. However, in the middle of this tragedy, I became a heroin addict, and I stayed that way for over 23 years. So I lived in addiction, serious addiction, for over 23 years, and lost, pretty much contact on and off with my family. And the last bout that I had in jail, my children decided to come and find me. And they came and found me and told me that this was a choice that I had made. And they wanted me to make a different choice. And after hearing that, I decided that this was a choice and that I chose not to live that way anymore. So once I was released from jail the last time, I decided to change my life. And while I was in there, I've always been a writer, and I used to write for Details magazine many years ago when they first started up. I went to school for script supervising, and I've always kind of been in that industry, but because of my addiction, it never went anywhere. I mean, nothing goes anywhere when you're stuck in a bathroom, you know? So I, you know, never went anywhere. So once I decided to get my life together while I was incarcerated, I used a computer and started writing my story and started sharing my story with other women who then started telling me details of stories that were, wow, even more horrific than mine. And I thought, my God, I'm not going to stay in this place. I'm going to get out here and do something with my life. And I decided to write my story. I wanted my story to be unique. So because I've always written poetry, I started each one of my chapters with a poem that I had wrote during the time that I was going through this particular scene. And I wrote my story, and my children and I decided to have the story published. I originally just started writing it as a release, but I then decided to start having the story published. After that, I felt like it wasn't enough just to tell the story, that I needed to look women in the eye and talk to them and show them that no matter where you came from, you could become successful. And so that's pretty much where I went with that. I do a lot of speaking engagements. Matter of fact, I go to the same sheriff's departments that actually arrested me, the same people that arrested me. I actually go and speak at their fundraisers now and talk to people, you know, and see the same police that always thought that I was just going to be an addict. So I want women, especially women, because a lot of times women, we have a hard time when things happen to our children. Men do too. But I don't have the outlook of a man. I have the outlook of a woman. And so I deal with a lot of women. My goal this year is to help as many women as I possibly can. I don't want to help them from a distance, though. And so that's probably where my mission is a little different than a lot of other people's. I don't want to help them from a distance, from the stage, you know, just speaking to them. I want to literally help women, because when women get out of jails, get out of these institutions, yes, they have committed crimes, and yes, they have paid their dues, and a lot of us have gotten what we deserve for the crimes we've committed, and a lot of us didn't even get what we deserve for some of the crimes that they didn't know about. So, but we have paid our dues, and a lot of women, like myself, are willing to change. And so, but there's the cold reality when you get out of, Where are you going to eat tonight, tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon? And so a lot of these programs and different things that I've investigated are great programs once you can get into them. And so there's the harsh reality of what are you going to do till then? So I want to make sure that I'm that person that's there to help them, you know, because ultimately you may need a change of underwear when you get out. Where do you get those while you're waiting to get into a program? So this is the type of thing that I'm working on right now.
You know, there definitely does need to be a lot more programs out here for not just women, but for men as well, for ex-offenders, you know, because you get out and a lot of times you don't have any support from your family because they already, you know, maybe not think a whole lot about you, or you're so distant from them because that was your choice that you don't have anything to do with your family. And you don't have any money, and you don't have, you know, clothes and a house and food. And so without the help and programs to help to get people started again and up and going in life, I think that's why a lot of people revert back to what they know on the street. And they go back to, you know, the stealing and the hustling and the just to make ends meet. It's not that they want to do it. It's just that that's what they know, and that's a survival mechanism.
And that's exactly true. And, you know, even myself, even though wanting to change when, you know, although I was a heroin addict, I had a home. You know, I owned a home in California at the time that I got out. But this same home that I owned was the place where I spent my time using drugs and selling drugs. But when I got out, that was the home that I had to go to. So I was, you know, forced to go there. I was fortunate to even have that. So that's the reason why I don't live in California, actually, at this time. I made a choice that I was going to change my life and change this started with me moving. And so I picked up and moved out of state to a new state where I knew absolutely no one but my son. my son gave me that option. He called me shortly after I had gotten out. When I first got out, I went to stay with some spiritual friends of mine after I was staying in my house and realized that I just couldn't make it from there, that I had too many old associates coming by and things like that, and I knew that my life would crumble. So, you know, and that's one thing that I try to talk to women about. You have to make hard decisions sometimes. You know, I made a decision to move out of a four-bedroom home that I stayed in alone to move in with a spiritual friend of mine in her one of her son's bedrooms, you know, and that belonged to someone else. So I went from being under my roof to under someone else's roof and rules. But that was a choice I made because I knew that I couldn't make it in my home when I got out. I knew that I couldn't make it there. So you have to make some hard choices. My son gave me a hard choice. He said, if you pack up and leave immediately, I'll give you a place, but it's out of state and you'll have to stay there, you know. So I said, you know what, I'm going to do it because I'm going to do something with my life. So a lot of times there are some choices that are left up to us, but one of the important things that I try to talk to people about is, although I got caught up in my addiction during a tragedy, because when I was younger, a teenager, I had experimented with different drugs. So when a tragedy happened, I ran to those drugs. So that's one thing I try to, you know, get over to children or young people that I talk to is that a lot of them say, oh, I'd never be addicted to heroin. You know, I'd never be addicted to cocaine. Oh, yeah, I smoked a little pot, you know, or I've done a line or something. But what are you going to do when you come home and maybe find your mother dead or anything, but God forbid, you're going to run to that escape that you just, oh, I just smoked a little joint. And you can find yourself in a whole nother world.
That's right. You know, you grew up in Detroit. You did grow up in Detroit, right?
Yes, I did. I went to Highland Park High.
Yeah, so, you know, Rob grew up in Detroit. And so, you know, knowing what happened back there in the 70s and 80s, you know, I can just imagine the crime. I don't know if the crime happened there or not, but I can imagine the crime that happened. But, you know, with the storm of drugs that came through in the early 80s, you know, you just saw the whole city from one extreme to the other because of the drugs, you know, the heroin, the crack and the different things. Can you talk a little bit about your life growing up there and what happened to you as a child?
Well, myself, as growing up in Detroit, and which is actually, you know, kind of which will let you know that, you know, it really doesn't matter where, you know, your background in a certain city. I grew up in Detroit. I grew up in Highland Park. My father was chief of police in Highland Park for some time. He also owned a security agency there. You know, but ultimately Detroit is organized crime. So even your people that were as mayors and doctors and lawyers also involved in the crime ring too, you know what I mean? So it's really
definitely
not that pretty of a picture.
There's a lot of people being paid off.
Exactly. So, you know, so, and that's the situation there. I was a straight-A student in school, you know, excelled very well, you know, didn't get involved with the wrong crowds, you know, for quite some time. My mother left Detroit when I was about 10, 11, 12. I went with her to Oklahoma for a couple of years and then went back to Detroit. I actually became a stripper, was stripping and going to school, you know. So at the same time, you know, and which is where I kind of got introduced more to the crime life, you know. My crime didn't happen in Detroit. It actually happened in California during a visit that I had went to my children a visit, you know, out there. And so my crime happened there. It ultimately affected me, and I went back to Detroit and fell into even worse addiction. Detroit is so powerful at the time that I became addicted, and probably still is today, with heroin, that it was literally on every corner, just literally on every corner, you know, literally.
Oh, it was.
And whereas people out here on the West Coast were more involved in other type of, you know, drugs like cocaine and stuff like that, people were literally addicted seriously to heroin there, and it was almost like it was okay. You could go in clubs and after-hour joints, and people would be tooting heroin at the table. Here's a drug that you have to have in the morning, and people were tooting it there. So it made it seem that it was okay, you know. It's not till you wake up and you're in tears and knots that you realize that, oh, wow, this is not going to be okay.
Right. And were you molested as a child?
Never. No, I was personally never, okay. never molested as a child. My children were involved in a horrific molestation and were very, very brutally raped and molested and sodomized. So at a very young age, at 5 and 6. So this is ultimately what took me out of the game of life.
Definitely. That's a hard blow for any mom to have to see. I mean, it's hard for any child to go through, but, you know, for a mom to have to see and feel maybe that she wasn't able to protect them or, I mean, I don't know, how did you feel when that happened? Were you...
The thing I think
that you weren't able to protect them?
No, I actually, my children were raped and sodomized by a family member that would just, you know, without even giving the book away by a very close family member. And because I had always been very close with my kids, they were like my little buddies, you know, that when their behavior changed, and this is something I talk to people about, that when their behavior changed, I immediately picked up on that something's not right here, something has happened. And so I definitely went straight for the hip and addressed it. Hey, has something happened to you? And which was and got the shock of my life when they answered yes. So that's how I found out. The thing that I wrote, one reason why I wrote my story was because I feel like that people hear stories like this or they watch stories on TV. I myself am addicted to watching ID Channel, you know. But what I always wonder with these people, what happened to these people months later? What happened to them the next week? No one addresses what it's like to find out to be walking in a normal life 1 minute and 10 minutes later find out that your son has been sodomized and raped. You know, how did, you know, what is that? That changes your, it's just a total life-changing moment. And not only that, after going to a hospital, after all the hospitals and police reports and investigations, and you're back at home and you're sitting across the table eating dinner the next day, how does that family deal with that? What do they talk about now? They all know they've been at the hospital all night being examined for being sodomized. What do you talk about with a 6-year-old kid the next day at the dinner table? You know, how do you react to that? And so ultimately, that's the thing. That's the reason why I wrote my book, because I wanted people to see in the life of a family and how a horrific crime of any sort can tear a family apart, can literally destroy the members of the family one by one.
Right. And everybody handles it in different ways, I would imagine. But a lot of people like to just kind of bury it and maybe forget that it didn't even happen to get through the next day.
Yeah, a lot of people chose that.
Right, go ahead.
A lot of people choose that route. I myself, because I didn't want my kids to let this control them. So I didn't want them to feel like we had to, you know, they had to hide it and hover it. It was hush hush. I put it out there on the table, you know. Hey, we're not going to let this get you down now, okay? Yeah, you've been raped, you know, and everything. We're going to be all right. We're not going to give it that power, though. We're going to do something with our lives. And ultimately, they did. My daughter is, she teaches nursing school. She teaches at a university in California. She also is going for a PhD. My son is in nursing school. He works at a place out here dealing with people that have psychological problems. So they actually took the problem, the crime, and turned it into a gift.
That sounds like a winner right there. Cause we have to turn that negative to a positive. And I can relate to you when you was talking about the heroin trade, because we controlled the heroin trade on the east side back in the 80s in the Warren County projects and all through St. Albans and Mack and Leland, all through there. So, yeah, I'm listening to you. Yeah, heroin was the most alcohol drug. Cocaine didn't have nothing on heroin, because like you said, you needed that every day you woke up. You might get half cocaine for 3 or 4 days and then go lay down somewhere, you know? But with the heroin game, you need that every day. You hit the flow.
That's right. You know, and you had to have a definite way that you were going to get it on a daily basis.
Amen.
No options. There's no options to that.
Right. And then that's what I try to explain to kids too, Cynthia, when I speak to them as well. You know, I tell them, you know, you think crack made you a ghost, heroin will make you a beast, you know? And you'll do any and everything to get that, you know what I mean? Because it ain't like you can just go sleep that off and chill. Yeah, you'll rob your own mama for that, you know what I mean? You do whatever it takes to get that Jones off you, you know? And when I say Jones, a lot of kids don't even know what that word means. That Jones means that monkey is on your back, you know what I mean? You sick, you need that, you know, by any means necessary. And a lot of these kids nowadays, they tamper with drugs like cocaine, heroin, and pills, and they don't even know the ugly side of that. They just think we're getting cool and everybody's partying and having a great time. But, you know, you might get that free one time at the party, but after that, you're paying.
That's right. That's right. And you can be paying. Myself, I paid for over 23 years. I had a long stretch there. I was in and out of jail maybe for a year here or 2 years there, but it still didn't stop. It's such a cold addiction that you can be off of it in jail and walk out the door knowing that if you do this, you will be hooked all over again and that heroin will call you.
Right. You'll be calling your man saying, meet me, I get out this day, pick me up.
Exactly. And, you know, I drive to California about once a month. As a matter of fact, I missed you guys a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But we both are so busy. But I drive there, and when I drive there right now, I have to have full control of my faculties, you know. I have to have full control of my faculties. My dreams are so much in front of my face right now that I can't see around them to look at the ugly things. And, you know, and I thank God for that. It's actually an answered prayer for me. However, it still doesn't take that knot away out of my stomach when I, you know, on the freeway, on the 91, coming across, going through to Riverside, and I'm like, ah, you know, boy, you know, I have to refocus my brain because that's just how cold addiction is.
That's right.
Yeah. So
I have a question for you from the chat room. That they want to know what happened to the family members who did that to your children.
That's an interesting question. I personally don't know exactly what happened to them. Actually, the person that did this to my children, I did legally try to at one point prosecute them and have them prosecuted. However, the laws were different at that time. There was also some children involved that were also instrumental in doing some very horrific crimes to my kids, and this was a part of the family that the children were even involved. So I did, you know, I did try my best to do something with this legally. I actually even in my book explored and go through step by step what I did do legally, and how the system is a lot different now. Because now, you know, you just have to whisper child molestation and something is done about it. However, back then, the laws were a little different. This was in the 80s. And although there was plenty of proof from doctors and everything, the legal things were not moving fast enough, and I was living a life of crime. So I don't know exactly what happened to them. I do know that I have never heard from one of them again.
Wow. So there's another question here. They want to know, in relation to the time frame that it happened to the children and you being in and out of jail, I mean, how did that happen?
Well,
what was the time frame of that?
Okay. This happened to my children when they were 5 and 6, and I was actually probably in my early 20s. And it was a progression. It's just like anything else, you know. I was a functioning addict for many years after that, in secret, you know. I spent about the first year after it happened, I would just go in the bathroom and just hold my face in a pillow and scream. You know, my guts would hurt. There's so many details that people don't understand, you know. I found it hard to even urinate because I had such bad visuals. I had nightmares, you know. So I did that for about 8-9 months to a year, and I found a needle in my mind, and then I took it to the next level. So I stayed in addiction and hiding for probably several years, raised my children as an addict, as a heroin addict, and then I started to lose ground with my functioning because just like any disease, it progresses. So as it progressed, so did my crimes. And so by the time they were about 12 to 13, I started going to jail. Eventually, my children ended up with my mother-in-law. And that's where they stayed. I just recently, in the past 6 months, got custody of my youngest child back, who's now, I have a 14-year-old. I just recently got back, who was 2 years old when they took him.
So you have three children? The two older ones?
I actually have five children. I have three.
Okay.
I have two older children, and then I had a second group of children. And
okay.
They're actually 14, 15, and 21.
Wow. Okay, we have several people in the chat room, and they're just chatting back and forth about different things that have happened. One of them says that that happened to her daughter, and she went with her to the police station, and they didn't do anything. That they said the guy that did it didn't know what he was doing. The guy was 15 and her daughter was 8. How would you address her with that?
I actually can understand that totally. When this happened with my daughter and son, as I say, I was very close to my kids, and so when something happened, I immediately. So I was always a reader and wrote stuff, you know, so I immediately thought about things I had read, you know. I says, okay, well, let me call 1-800-CHILD-ABUSE, you know. So I'm just going to put it out there. So I called 1-800-CHILD-ABUSE, where they tried to find out the address where I was so they could send police. And I thought, this isn't a good idea. They're going to come snatch my kids. So I talked to my kids because we were not just family, just mother and child. We were actually buddies, you know. And I told them, look, we're going to the hospital, you know, and when we get there, you're going to have to look these people in the eye and tell them who did this to you, or they're going to take you from me because they're not going to know what's going on. And my daughter was 5 years old at the time but was very intelligent. Both of them were. And at the time, I had no idea my son had actually been violated. It was a little secret between both of them. So when I got to the hospital, actually it was the doctor who involved the police. So my suggestion to people when something like that happens is to go to the hospital, because these people have medical records and medical things, you know, that can prove that something has happened. It is an ultimate shame that anyone would get a pass because they didn't know what they were doing. Neither does a child. They don't know what this person is doing to them, too. So they're being sentenced. They're being sentenced to this, and they don't know what they're doing either. So, you know, my heart goes out to the person who is in the chat room. And it's just, you know, I'm glad that she's in the chat room and that she's not somewhere lost in society behind this. So I commend her for being strong enough to reach out, to be in chat rooms, and obviously to be trying to, you know, find out some information about it, because so many people just get lost like I did. So I take my hat off to her. That's what I have to say to her.
Right. The other question, second part to the first question I asked you, she wants to know, where were the kids when this happened? Was it at your house or was it at the other family member's house?
It was at the other family member's house.
Okay.
I was actually.
And was.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, you weren't incarcerated at that time, were you? Because you said you started getting incarcerated later.
No, I wasn't incarcerated or anything. The children were there on a visit. There were, you know, several things involved. I hate to give the book away because it was really just really, really amazing how it even happened. But this was not only just something that had happened that day. This was a process. Like I said, there were some kids, older kids involved. And so the whole household over there were pretty sick. I'll put it that way. So the crime was so horrific that one of the doctors telling me that my daughter's insides were the worst insides he had ever seen on a live person, that her insides had been tore up so bad that if he had just saw the x-rays, he would think that she was not alive.
Wow. That's just unbelievable. And is your daughter able to have children and live a normal life that
way?
Yes,
she does live. Yeah, actually, she's more focused in the medical field and has made the choice to put her career first. So that's the choice that she made. And she worked for quite some time at a hospital. She's an RN. She went to Howard, graduated with full honors from Howard, has moved very rapidly forward in her medical career. Her main focus is on babies. She plans to open up a rape crisis center after she gets her PhD that deals with children who have been abused. She's really brilliant. She's teaching the RN program at a university out in California now. And she's also going to get her PhD. She's doing a lot of other things. She works in the community quite a bit. And she's one of my biggest supporters, does a lot of speaking engagements with me, is probably listening, you know, and she's just that way. But she has chose not to, she does not look at having a family. She does not look that way. For her, that's not the way to go. She had a horrific experience, and it definitely has affected whether or not she's decided to have children.
Right. Yeah, you know, sexual abuse, you know, no matter whether you're a child or a teenager or an adult, you know, it still, I think, affects you. I don't know, I kind of want to say all the same, but then again, it affects everyone differently, like we said before. But sexual abuse is sexual abuse, and it's a crime, and it's hurtful. It just does so much damaging to you, you know. And like you said, you know, people turn to drugs and alcohol, and you know, it's just horrific.
It's a very damaging thing. But I tell you something, and this is something that I speak to a lot of when I do speaking engagements, is that there are a lot of damaging things out there. That is just one of them. From different research that I've done, there's over 6 million children who are raped in the United States on a yearly basis. 6 million. So that's not just 6 million children. That's 6 million families are affected by this, you know. But this is just one of the things that can affect a family, you know. This is just one of the horrific crimes that affect the family. There are a lot of horrific crimes that affect the family. What we have to deal with is we know that there are crimes out there, and we know that bad things happen. They shouldn't, but they do. So it's how we deal with it when it happens, what we're doing before they happen. So we have to empower ourselves so that when we're faced with horrific things, that we're able to deal with it and we're not destroyed. Because once we're destroyed, once I was destroyed, I actually was the matriarch left of my family. So when I was destroyed, I destroyed my whole family. So there was a lot of repair that had to been done, a lot of things that could have been avoided had I been empowered before this happened.
Now, where was your husband or the father of the children during all this time?
Actually, the father was the family member who raped the children.
Holy cow. Where's my 9? Let's do it Detroit style. Come on. Where are you?
I was hoping that question was going to be avoided. think, but yeah.
Well, yeah,
so that's what
the men
one thing
in their lives are supposed to be the mentors, the leaders, the you know, the teachers, and he wouldn't be just only missing. I mean, he'd be missing.
Hopefully,
well,
he's definitely missing from our lives. We don't give him any power anymore. You know, we've all moved on, you know. And my daughter makes a statement to me, you know, while I was writing the book, she was the one who related exactly how the crime went. And I put that in the book because I wanted people to be able to be there and see what it was like to be 5 years old, so high, and for a 6-foot-tall person, and you being daddy's girl. And to go through, because she wasn't molested, she was viciously raped. So I wanted people to be there in the moment. And even when I tried to dress it up pretty, you know, or just a little bit, you know, make it a little bit softer, my daughter would say, no, that's not how that happened. That's not what that's like. It's not like that, Mama. I need you to tell them exactly what it's like. Because I want people, when they read it, I want them to be there where I was at so they can know how far we came. Today, when I was listening to her, I'm always even empowered when I hear her speak. I was listening to her a couple of years ago do a speech, about a year ago when we first were releasing the book, and she told them that we were the people we were today, not in spite of what happened to us, but because of what happened, and she was glad everything had happened to her because she felt like she could save someone else. And I thought,
right.
You know what, that's amazing, and that's how I feel today, too. I'm not sad that I was, you know, I have no regrets. I live my life today with no regrets. I don't regret anything that I've done.
Yeah, you know, I think most of us are, you know, who we are today because of what we went through. Obviously, you know, we wouldn't be doing what we do today if we hadn't have gone through, you know, all the things that we went through. And, you know, good or bad, thank God we made it through. And, you know, I was just, I don't talk about this a whole lot, but when I was a child, I was molested by a couple of different family members, one of them female and one of them an older male. And we know that he did a lot of things to several of our cousins, but we never talked about it growing up. And back, you know, when we were growing up, I guess we didn't talk about things like they do today. but, you know, those things, and they weren't, I mean, it was abuse, but it wasn't hurtful to, you know, I wasn't beaten or, you know, hit or anything like that. But it was still detrimental, no matter what. And by age 13, I think I was already, you know, turned to alcohol. And that was my addiction for several years, even though, you know, my self-esteem was low, but I still wanted to be noticed. You know, I was in several activities in high school. I was, you know, in cheerleading. I was in volleyball. I was in track. I was, you know, in the different clubs. I just wanted to be noticed, I guess, and feel special. So I kind of exerted myself. And that's one of the signs of abuse in some children is that they exert themselves to compensate, to overcome, I think, and be noticed. At the same time, you know, you're oppressing everything else and not talking about it. But, you know, the alcohol was, I can say 95% of the problems in my life have been related to alcohol. And so I'm better off when I don't drink at all, you know, because of the things that happened. And I know that I don't need it now. But before, I think I was just trying to hide behind it and trying to forget about it.
Yeah. Today I deal my job, the job that I have. I manage a lot of people who are on their last chance. You know, a lot of people that come to work for me are on their last chance in life, you know. And so
yeah.
I'm able to relate to them, you know. I'm able to be down to earth with them, you know. I'm able to help them to draw, because one of the biggest things that has helped me to get farther in my life rapidly, because I actually only will have 3 years in March, you know. And one of the things that's helped me to become successful so very fast within those 3 years is work ethics. You know what I mean? It's having good work ethics. It being able to get up and show up, you know. I treat my life now, today, like I did, and I tell this to people in meetings that I have at my job with employees on a regular basis, is that you've lived, you know, I lived in the fast lane, I lived as an addict, and I treat my life today like an addiction. You know, I treat my business that I have like an addiction. When I was addicted, I would call every connection in the morning, and the first one that showed up, I took it, I dealt with it, you know. But I wouldn't just call one, I'd call this one, that one, I'd go everywhere I could go to try to make it happen. And so today, that's how I live my life. When it comes to my book and marketing my book, I knock on this door, that door. I don't just go through one avenue. I knock on all of them. I address them all, you know. when it comes to doing what I need to do to get up for work every day, I get up for work every day and show up like a robot, you know, because I know that this is what keeps me. And, you know, and I tell people this a lot of times, you know, is that that is actually what has made me the person that I am today, because I put into my mind that I got up and showed up for that habit every morning, no matter what. I got up and showed up for that. You didn't even have to. No one had to wake me up. It woke me up. So I let my dream wake me up now. And I get up and show up for that, you know. And obviously, and, you know, and I have a lot of respect for you. You know, I followed you a lot on Facebook. I follow your blog, you know. I follow different things that you're doing. And I said, wow, this woman gets up and shows up. Boy, she is on it. Sometimes I'm at home, you know, or in the middle of my day, my email goes off on my phone. And it's, you know, your blog. Boy, this woman is on it.
You know, and I guess that's what keeps us sane, you know, that we, you know, have the health and strength to get up and stay busy and get out and make each day a new day and a great day. And you know, it's all about choices. You know, how do I want my day to be? What am I going to do today? You know, am I going to make it a great day, or am I going to, you know, just put the covers over my head and hide and not do anything? You know, and it's when we can get up, sometimes even when we don't feel like it, and get up and make it happen and do something. And, you know, and our whole purpose is to educate and reach out and help. And you know, and sometimes I feel too, you know, why am I even posting anything on Facebook? Or why am I even, you know, sending anything, you know, to a blog? Who's really out there reading it? Who's listening? Who's looking? Then every once in a while you'll get somebody that says, you know, hey, thanks, that helped me, or that, you know, got me through what I was going through, and it makes it all worth it, you know.
And that's right, because I can remember an experience when I was first, you know, had my book. I was dealing with a professor that was out in Fullerton, and she had introduced me to some people, and those people introduced, you know, passed me on to some people, and the people flew out to visit me out here in Phoenix and talk to me about a book deal. But they wanted me to change the book, you know, and they didn't want me to tell the truth. They wanted me to change the book. And although I wrote the book at very good pace, I did tell the story in rare form, and that's why I named it that way, you know. I was the language is not bad or anything like that, but the story is told in rare form. And if you want to know in rare form how what happens, the life inside of a tunnel, I'm going to give it to you. I'm also give you the story of how I walked out. So it's a very inspirational book. But they wanted me to actually change a few things. And I talked to my daughter about it, you know, who had went through it. And I said, yeah, you know, I really want to do this deal, you know. And, you know, and I said, I'm not sure I'd be able to sell the book if I don't join this way. You know, and she says, absolutely not, because that's not the reason why we're doing the book, Mama. Don't lose focus on why you're doing the book. Don't lose focus on that. If you get that, if you just publish that book, if you go and just print it out on some tight paper, and we just glue some plastic around it, and we're able to set it on the mantelpiece, and I can hand it to one woman, one person, and it helps them, then it has been worth the book. So, you know, so that's how, you know, so that's how I view it today. And I tell you, I get more response when sometimes I'm some places, I feel so much better. Oh, I love it. Of course, I'm a business person. I love it when my phone, you know, zings from PayPal, you know, from someone purchasing the book, of course. But I get the best feeling when I'm somewhere and I'm speaking somewhere and someone will come to me and say, hey, I don't have any money for a book today, but let me have your email address so I can buy one when I get the money. And I give it to them. And then they email me and tell me how much it's. And how, wow, I can't believe you made it this far. Maybe I can, hey, do you know of any resources? And they start getting involved in their life. And I'll get involved in their life, too, because I am an available person. You can always reach me. I give my number out. I give my email address. I'm there for people, you know. And I feel so much better when that happens to me. And I've read so much of your stuff. I've read so much of your stuff that is very inspirational. And so I'm sure that's why you're doing it, because you're just like on it.
Right. And I'll be loving that, Cynthia, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I had to just say I take my hat off to you, you know, when I first ran across you. And, you know, I seen you was from the city, and then I seen your story, you know. I was like, wow, you know, because like I said, I know about heroin. You know, I sold it for a lot of years, and I seen the addiction that people had, you know what I'm saying? I seen how a lot of cats, you know what I mean, died, you know. I seen the whole nine yards. So I had to take my hat off to you for even, you know, making it through, you know what I mean, your challenges and your trials and tribulations to live to tell your story and your message to the world, because there's so many, as you know as well, that ain't here to tell their story or their message, you know. So I just want to say, you know, we thank you very much for that. And I got to give glory all to God for, you know, my wife, because, yeah, like you say, people see her out there on it, you know what I'm saying? And she be's in the background, but she don't be in the background, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of people might say to me, like, man, you know, we want to do an interview with you, you know what I mean? But I tell the newspaper all the time, you know, and I say, well, I say, I know I'm the man up front. I mean, this is my story and this is my life, you know. I say, but my wife is a very key figure at all this, you know what I'm saying? So I say, when I'm in the paper, she has to be right there too, because I want people to understand that I'm not just in this by myself, you know what I mean? I have a teammate, you know what I mean? I have someone that believed in me, that helped me get to the point where we needed to be, because I wasn't even really going to tell my story because there was so much to my story, you know? So I want people to understand it's just more than just me, because I'm the guy, you know what I mean, that lived that lifestyle. I have a wife who's right there with me every step of the way. She's not in back of me, none of that. She's right beside me, you know what I'm saying? So that's a key figure that I let everybody know off the rip.
And you know what, and I'll tell you something. That is, and that in itself is an amazing feat, coming from the lifestyle. I myself, just coming from my lifestyle, it's a hard lifestyle to become, to have a mate with after you've, you know, come out of the tunnel. You have so many, whether you were in the tunnel, I actually sold crack to supply my heroin habit. So I was on both sides, and after coming out of either side, it's difficult for someone to believe in you enough to give you 100% support. And not only is it a lot for that, it's a lot for me to even accept any type of support or accept any type of partnership, because I'm so strong on taking care of myself, you know, doing everything myself and handling all my own business, that it is very difficult. And, you know, I live alone right today because of those very reasons, you know.
Yeah.
That it's a hard adjustment to make, you know. To have someone you're checking in with or you're discussing business with, you're so used to the secrets, you know what I mean? To it being all your secret, that I commend you both for making the adjustment.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people ask my wife, they say, wow. They say, how did you get involved with a gangster and a thug from Detroit? You know, y'all,
right. That's
a whole different element right there. You're a country girl from a farm and horses and cows. How did you ever meet a thug
you know,
like him?
Sometimes I joke around with him that I was at Arizona Connect. And they're like, what? And yes, I grew up down by the border in Mexico, right?
So it blows them away.
But actually,
you know?
He has friends that really believe that. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, I'll have to have a show just to ask you guys myself.
You know what I mean? Because one of her sisters, Cynthia, asked her when she seen my background in from the city, right? She was like, wow, that guy done did all these different things like that, and you say you love him? Girl, is you serious?
No, she's scared of him. No, I'm not scared of him.
Yeah, I was, as a matter of fact, I because I got connected with you through someone in Detroit, and who actually, that's how I ended up getting, and I thought, wow, this guy is talking about the streets don't love you back. They seem to show them a little bit of love. I'm like, yes, you know, things didn't happen that way. But, wow, that is an amazing, amazing feat. And you know what? I'll tell you something, especially coming from Detroit and coming from a life of crime, you know, and because obviously, I'll tell you, because I can't even say it enough, Lucinda is on it.
Without a doubt, you know what I mean? And you know what I love about it, though, Miss Cynthia? I don't care where I travel. I don't care where I'm at. You know what I mean? I don't ever have to second guess nothing. Business is always on the flow. I don't have to say, is that done, this done? I mean, we know each other so well, it's like everything is on point. You know what I mean? Nobody has to say, did you do that or did that happen? None of that. You know what I mean? We on to what we have to do next. You know what I mean? Or what you feel we should do next. So it's like the element of the game is so there. And like I told her, you know, all my life I also used to just be into myself, you know, or with my crew. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So when I got with a woman that never come from my lifestyle, you know, like I told her at first, you know what I mean, I thought she was fed trying to get at me, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so, I mean, you know, I had to just keep it real with her, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, you come from that background, you know, I come from a whole different element, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I'm like, wow, you know, and yeah, so that's the way it was, Miss Cynthia. And then, like I said, her sister was like, you know, all the things he done did in Detroit and the, you know, he was running for a murder for hire crew, and you say you want to marry him? You know?
Are you nuts? Well, let me ask you something. So now you go back, and I know this is an interview about me, but this is actually about me because I'm very curious about this. So now you go back and forth to Detroit, and you do different things there?
You know, for many years, I didn't go back and forth to the house, you know what I mean, because I wanted to just leave my past behind me, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So now, in the last few years, I've been going back and forth to the house and setting up some things with a lot of influential people, because I've always known influential people through the city coming up as a kid, you know? And now I do that, but I've always did a lot of things throughout Cincinnati and coming to California and different things like that, so I just really started putting the foundation back down at the house, you know, and reaching out to help the youth and everything there. So you know how it is, though, Cynthia.
Well,
you know, once you don't
let me add to that a little bit, too, Cynthia. You know, he did kind of what you did. You know, if you want to change your life, you have to change your surroundings. You have to change your friends. You have to change everything that you're doing. And so when he made the change to get away from, you know, the crime life, he moved to Cincinnati, which is a few hours away, but he didn't know anybody down there. He just went. And he's been there ever since, pretty much. But, you know, like you leaving California, and, you know, you have to, if you really want to make some serious changes, you know, in your life, sometimes you have to make the big changes, and that's to leave what you know, to go somewhere new, to meet new people, to do new things, and you know, just start over.
Right, and I'll tell you, that's been amazing. And I've always heard that, you know, oh, you know, the new environment, oh, the new friends. But I'll tell you something, I never had any faith in that because in my mind, I, you know, and not in my mind, but just in real life, I think, how do you just pick up and go somewhere? But I'll tell you something, you know, just through, and you know, and this doesn't work for everyone. This is just for me. You know, I was praying. I had made a decision. You know, my daughter had just came to visit me behind bars and told me, why do you choose to live your life this way? You're an intelligent woman. You're choosing to live this way. You need to make a different choice, Mom. So, you know, and it kept ringing in my head, you know, so when given an option, because options will come to you. It's just that when you're in addiction or when you're in a lifestyle, you don't, those options don't seem viable to you because you want to, you know, you want to do something that's familiar. But I'll tell you that. And when you get out, you know, and that's the reason why I'm involved in trying to help women when they get out of jail, when they first get out, because you don't have those options really. If they're, you know, because there's no friends at the gate. unless they're the old friends. There's no new environment because you can't afford it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there has to be some type of transition point. We can't sit up and preach to people to change their environment and change their friends if we're not an available friend with a new environment. You know,
Amen.
We got to be a new friend with a new environment. We can't be talking about, oh, well, you know, old Cynthia just got out. Boy, she's right back over there in the hood. Where else was she supposed to go? To Scottsdale?
And that's what makes me mad too, because you know once you walk out the gates, you're an ex-offender, an ex-felon, and you're on probation or parole, and you're told not to talk to anybody that's an ex-felon or ex-offender. Who the hell are you supposed to talk to?
Right.
If you're in jail, pretty much that's the only kind of people you know.
Right.
But,
I was an addict for
20
years.
Your family members or anybody, and that's just. Exactly. And that's
else.
How, I mean, this jail system is just a revolving door, and it's a setup, you know. There's just so many other topics we could get off on. You know, I do have a couple of questions for you, though, about your time being incarcerated. I want you to talk to the young women and all women in general about what it's like for women being incarcerated. And then also the second part of the question is once you get put behind those doors and you have no heroin, what you're going through at that point?
Well, I'll tell you to start off with what it's like to be incarcerated. For myself, I never did time well. I was just one of those people who couldn't do time well. So I was always counting the days, you know. But being in the lifestyle, I was committing crimes, and when I was in addiction, I was selling cocaine and doing a lot of different large scams, you know. So getting busted was kind of like part of the game, you know.
Right.
So I would get busted, you know, I would go to jail. And to tell you the truth, you know, it was just part of a vicious cycle, you know. The one thing that really, really set in my mind was the last time that I was busted, I was thrown in the Riverside County Jail, and I was kicking heroin, you know, and I was having a really hard time. I was vomiting. I had diarrhea. I was sweating, and, I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep, and I was in a cell with, they were overcrowded, and although there were supposed to be two people in a cell, we were actually three in there, but I was in there with these two girls. One was facing 56 years, and one was facing 29 years. And so in the midst of me kicking, I was able to see that these women were going to be in there for the next 40 to 50 years, you know, and they were 25 years, about approximately that old. And so in my mind, while I was kicking, I was thinking, my God, you know, please, I don't want to go. I don't want to go out like this. I don't want to spend the rest of my life in prison, you know. And so I remember the guards coming to get me, telling me, hey, you know, we want to take you to the hospital, get you something, you know, help you get through the kicking, you know. I didn't want it, though, because I wanted to feel it this time. I wanted to feel it so I wouldn't forget, and I've never forgot. I've never forgot, you know, because I made that time. I didn't take the pills to, you know, I didn't buy the sleeping pills from people to get through it. That time I just said, I'm going to do this the raw way because I don't want to forget this time. I don't want to never do this again. So I'm just going to take it. It's a very, I was on a cold cell floor, you know. I was going to court at 4 in the morning. People don't realize that it's, you know, a lot of these kids think, oh, going to jail is cool. It's not cool. And if your friend told you it was cool, they were playing because they were probably crying and they don't want to tell you that. Because nobody is getting through this. Nobody's tough on those days when they're getting you up at 4 o'clock in the morning, stripping you down, having you bend over, pull your private parts apart while a person looks at you with a flashlight. There's nothing cool about that. And I don't think that people really understand the raw things that are going on there. You know, these are raw things. Do you want this taken from you where you gotta pee with someone sitting next to you?
Right.
No. It's a horrible life to live. Horrible life to live.
Amen.
That's right. And then I heard that, you know, I mean, that overcoming the heroin addiction, the illness that you get is just like one of the worst things you could ever go through. And obviously you went through it, so.
Yes, it was horrible, horrible, horrible. You know, and it's sad because I had actually kicked several times before in jail. But generally I would buy some sleeping pills or I would accept some medical help, you know. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, just the way I got in it was the way I wanted to come out, just hard. I wanted to just go ahead and come out hard because I didn't never want to, you know, and I'll tell you something that I do, you know, even right today, you know. I go to California, and although my stomach may be in a little knot, sometimes I'll stop at a store or something, and I'll see an addict there, you know, or I'll see someone I know, and they're weighing about 100 pounds less than they were the last time I saw them, and they're trapped in the bondage of addiction. And you know what? It doesn't make me want to get high. It makes me get it back in my car, and I'm in my brand new car, and I'm coming from my job where I'm, you know what I mean, and I'm living my life, and I'm selling my book, and I sit in my car, and before I crank it up, I thank you, God, for getting me out of this.
Amen. Right. You hear me? And what I want you to do, Cynthia, I want you to give the fans your website, let them know where they can go get that great message at, and let them know that.
My website is www.inrareformbook.com. And you can also Google me. I'm Cynthia Miller. If you Google me, I'll pop up, and you can follow me on Google. I'm on Twitter under In Rare Form. I'm on Facebook under Cynthia Miller. I also have an In Rare Form page. I also write short stories of inspiration, and you'll find them on my In Rare Form page. You just like my page, and you can read my short stories of inspiration. I do a lot of poetry workshops. I'm always doing workshops. If you just Google me and find me and follow me, you'll be with me right along the way. You can email me at cynthia.miller@inrareformbook.com. And if you're a woman and you need someone to talk to, you can call me because I give my number out. My number is 602-570-6526. If you're a woman or a man who needs a second chance or a job, I also hire people in the Phoenix area. I have a place that I work that I'm a general manager at that I hire people and give them a second chance. So you can also find me that way.
You hear that, ladies and
gentlemen?
Can you
email me all that information? I want to put that up on our website as a resource.
Right.
Okay.
She also gives you a second chance, and that's what I have to truly take my hat off to individuals who have been in the belly of the beast, and they have been able to overcome that and come back to solid ground. And I wanted to say something to you too, Cynthia, that I read on your page that made more sense than ever. You cannot write a good book if you have not lived that lifestyle. And I wanted to just say that was the best thing I could have seen you write on your page, you know, because I don't knock what nobody do out here. But I also want to say one thing. True life being lived and a person see that you have overcame what you have went through, that is the best message in American history right there. You know, it's a lot of people, and I'm not going to say no names, but I got truly offended of some people that say, okay, I wrote this book, but half of it's not true. Okay, I'm looking at you. Well, why would you write a book and half of it's not true? You know, I'm used to where I come from in Detroit. I'm used to the real. You know what I mean? I'm used to always 100, you know. I'm not used to half of a story, you know what I mean? If you're going to help someone and you are willing to step up to the plate and spread your message, why should it be half truth, half lie? You know what I mean? That's not a good look. So I had to commend you on that statement you made on your page. You cannot write a good book if you have not lived that lifestyle. And that is the bottom line.
And that is the bottom line. And, you know, and I'll tell you something. What I do is that I really, really, I relate to people like that I work with, you know. And I talk to them about my background. I try to help them as much as I can. I have a young lady that, that works with me right now, that works for me, that I brought her in and showed her, hey, look, let me show you something. Here, I just got my paper right here from getting my kids back. You can do this. Come on, let's do this. Have your social worker give me a call so I can let her know how good you're doing here at work today. Okay?
Amen.
And she did. And she went through the process. And she texted me and sent me a picture of her with her first visit with her child. I came to work a couple of days ago, and as I walked in, she almost scared me. She grabbed me and hugged me, said, "Cynthia, my kids come home in 2 weeks. I'm going to do this."
God is good.
That's a reward for me.
Exactly. You know, and that's what makes me feel so good, too, Cynthia. When me and my wife travel together and we go to these speaking engagements, and someone come up and say, "Wow, you know what I mean? I really, really, you know what I mean, like what you spoke on, and it touched me, you know what I mean?" That's more to me than money, you feel me? Because that's saving somebody's life, you know? Money, we have to have that in life, but I know what it is to have money, you know what I mean? That ain't something I got to learn what to have, you know? I already know that, you know? But to know that you helped the individual, that means more than money to me, you know? Because the real woman, the real man, they going to make some money. As long as you're living in America and outside of America, you're going to make some bread, you know?
That's right.
But it's
and
nothing
I always
like
tell people, as long as they're making it in Fort Knox, I'm going to have some.
Amen. Don't be twisted. We're definitely going to have to have some change, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Hey, and that come from that Detroit hustle in you. You're going to have some money, you know what I mean, legitimate all the way, because we know what it is to have it unlegitimate, but, you know,
we've been
through that. We've walked that walk, you know? So it's all about the legitimacy, and it's all about sitting back saying, "Wow, you know, God, look where you brought me from, you know? I could be still living in that dog jungle. I could still be living in the belly of that beast," you know what I mean? So that's a great reward at the end of the day, when you can say, "Wow, I'm still here."
That's right. I'm still here, and I'm not going nowhere. You know, I am not going nowhere.
So I really just wanted to touch on that with you, because, like I said, when I seen that really, I was like, "Wow, okay." I say, "She's from the house," you know. I said, "She's keeping it 1,000, you know what I'm saying? But that really touched me when you wrote that little part right there, you know? Yeah, you can. How can you tell a man about penitentiary? You ain't even never been to the penitentiary, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, how you going to write about it?
You know what I'm saying? How you going to tell a man how it is to be in the hole and you ain't even never been in the penitentiary to go to the hole? What hole are you talking about? The Edison hole where you digging dirt and putting down wires? Okay, if you've done that, you could tell him about that.
Yeah, then talk to them, write a book about that. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You know,
ain't
somebody
want
to read about that, too.
Because somebody might learn how to put the wires in the ground. But don't be talking about, you know, about the hole, and you ain't never even been there. Because the youth looking at you like, who is this dingbat up here, man? Have he been anywhere yet? No, you ain't never did nothing wrong in your life. So how could you tell another man or woman about they doing wrong? You know what I mean? You have to live it in order to preach it, and that's just the bottom line. I don't see no in-between in that. Do you see in-between in that, Miss Cynthia?
I see no in-between in that. There's actually
either,
no in-between
yes
in
no.
that. It's either yes or no. And I tell you something, and that's what people have, and that's what you have to figure out. I think that's the whole key. And I'll tell you, a friend of mine, I was at spiritual services last night, and a friend of mine reminded me of that. She always gives me little reminders, you know. And
right.
I told her, I said, "Yeah," I said, "I'm so tired, you know." And she said, "You look tired today." I said, "Yeah, I'm so tired, you know." And I was telling her, and I started to vent to her and tell her, you know, I said, "Yeah, you know, I'm really, you know, I'm always reaching out, looking for positive people who want to get on the bandwagon. I can get on the bandwagon with her. They get on the bandwagon with me because I want to do this and I want to do that." And she told me, "Cynthia, you have to step all the way across the street." You know, she said, you can't be in the middle of the street trying to grab people and bring them over to the other side with you. You got to get over there all the way across the street and throw them a rope.
Right.
That's the only thing you can do.
On the battlefield, like God was. He walked among hoes, prostitutes, murderers, all of that. You know what I mean? And this is what my agenda comes in my mind. You know what I mean? You got a lot of people, quote unquote, and we keep it 1,000 on this show. You know, you got a lot of people that got the big churches, you know what I mean? And Folk Street sober, we got homeless and poverty and everything else, you know? But after church over with, nobody's going Folk Street sober saying, hey, little Johnny, hey, little Susie, you know what I mean? Is everything all right? Do you need some prayer? Or do you need something to eat? I mean, this is the thing that God did when he walked the earth. You know what I mean? So how can you sit up there and think you're better than the next man? You can't be that, because the same thing go up will come down, because he gave all this to us. You feel me?
So that's right.
That's why I still stay in the hood. You feel me? When I'm in Detroit, I go straight to the ghetto. You feel me? Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't born in Southfield, you know?
Okay.
I wasn't born in Bloomfield Hill. I was born in the Black Bottoms. You dig? And that's where I go when I'm in the city. I go see my old homeboys. I don't care if they got big feet, big fists, any of that. You still my man. You just made the wrong choice at what you doing. You know what I mean? I'm going to let you see what I'm doing, and then you're going to have a choice like, damn, Rob doing it, man. You know what I mean? Rob done, you know what I mean, did the right thing. So I'm going to let you know I'm doing the right thing, and you still got a choice. It's still a way out. And when
that's
you're ready,
right,
you can see it is a way out, because look at me, I'm still breathing, I'm still living. And, you know, when I first brought my wife to Detroit and took her to the Black Bottom, they were spooked. You know what I mean?
Well, I got some looks.
Hey, Cynthia, you know, the room was spooked when I brought her down there. You know what I'm saying?
Ooh, I know it.
They was like, damn, who was that? Who was that? You know what I mean? I had to let everybody know, that's my girl. She with me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the fellas was like, you know, like, wow, who was that in the hood? You know, because they ain't used to seeing a white lady in down there where I come from. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yes, I know exactly what you mean.
But when they met her, you know what I mean, and they knew she was mine, she became family.
Okay.
They didn't look at her, she was a white lady. She became family, and they say, oh, you rob people? That's all need to be said. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So,
because Detroit is like that. It's very loyal. It's loyal to the game.
It's still loyal to me, Cynthia. You feel me? Because when I did wrong, I took care of the whole hood. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When my man's come over sick, I didn't even care. Give my man that or give, you know, baby girl that. You know what I mean? Even on their birthdays, even on Christmas, I give everybody something. You didn't even have to have no money. Everybody got a Christmas gift that did business with me. You know, on your birthday, you get the gift on your birthday. See, because I was that type of hustler. I wasn't hustler that wanted all the money for myself. I took
care
of the whole world.
That's why you were able to make it out. But see, that's why you were able to make it out.
Right. I took care of the people who used, and I took care of the people who watched out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So every time I'm in the hood, every time they ask me for money, my wife will tell you, I don't care what they doing. I go in my pocket, I say, here, my nigga. You feel me?
That's
my man's in there, you know?
Yeah.
I knew him before he became a drug user, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
and hopefully you're going to know him when he's out. Because hopefully he'll find his way out.
I'm not going to look at you because you fell off for a while, you know? You still
that's
my
right.
man, you know?
That's
so
right.
I think that separates me from a lot of hustlers that was hustling, you know what I mean, back in my era, you know, from the 70s and 80s and early 90s. I took care of my people. And when I did fade it out the game, but you know how many sad faces in the game? They said, man, we ain't never found nobody like you, boy. You get catch stuff for Christmas, birthdays, running to the store. I mean, you know the whole nine yards.
And that's why you were able, that's, you know, and whether or not that's a quality. And it takes certain qualities when you want to get out of the lifestyle.
Right.
You have to have certain qualities, and those qualities have to be embedded in you if you want to get out of the lifestyle. See, I have certain qualities. I was a strong, strong independent hustler who always was able to organize things. I always had things organized, you know, had people, you know, I had assignments for everybody. So, you know, so it carried on with me. And so then, you know, and now, you know, now that I'm you know, I'm doing something different and I'm legally working and I'm legally managing people, and I think back and I think, wow, You know,
I was doing that all the time.
I just took it another way.
That's one thing, too. That's one thing that we tell the kids when we talk to them, too. You know, a lot of the, not all the gang members and drug dealers out on the streets are smart, but the ones that are leading the crews and out there really hustling, they're smart-minded. They're business-oriented. And if they were just educated enough to have to learn about something legal, you know, they could take that business to town and go, you know, all the way. It's just about getting out here and letting the kids know before they get mixed up with the wrong friends that, you know, you're smart, you can do it, you know, and educate them in the right direction. Because a lot of these kids get out here on the street just because, you know, they're bored in school or they're upset at home and they just kind of go out and do what they do. But a lot of them are not dumb. They're smart kids.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just a matter of finding your talent, finding your gift. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I know that's easier
and it's
said
actually
than done.
To realize that you have a gift, because sometimes these kids have never been told, you know, you're awesome at what you do, or you're smart at math, or you're smart at talking with people. You would be great in sales. They're not told the positive things very often, I think. And just to be encouraging and tell them, I think you would be great at this, then they start thinking, you think I could? Of course you can, you know, but to be told something positive to make them make that choice or that change in their life, you know.
Right.
And see, and I'll tell you something, we all have, even when I was in my addiction, we all have those little secret things that we keep inside of us that I wish I could do this. You know what I mean? I wish I think I'm a good writer. I should have wrote a book. I wish I could have did this. But so what I try to do when I reach out to people is when I reach out to them, like I go and I do these poetry workshops, when I reach out to them and find out and talk to these kids and ask them, you know, I do a program also that I call 25 Things Before 25. And so what I do when I finally am able to reach these people, because sometimes it takes a minute for people to release that inner little secret thing they want to do, because everybody, the worst gangbanger, the worst dope fiend, you know, the abused woman, the everybody has that little secret thing inside of you that you think about, that you visualize yourself doing, whether it's a corporate in a corporate office, whether it's a movie star, whatever it is, you got that little secret thing you got hidden in you that you think about every now and then on rare occasions when you're by yourself. And so I reach and I find those little things, and then I explore the steps it takes to get there. Okay, so you want to be an artist, right? Okay, so what can you draw? Okay, let's get on Google and find out what we can find out about this. Let's Google up and see what type of artist events are in Phoenix. Let's see the names of any artists that are on Facebook that are in Phoenix. Let's reach out to them and tell them what you're trying to do. Let's take the next step. Let's see what school you would need to go to. Let's see if we can get you some FAFSA funding. Let's see if we can do this, because I want to take people. Sometimes people need that hand to get them started. Sometimes I'll take people through one step, two steps, and I'll look up a few months later and they're sending me information on their business now. You know,
right.
And I'm like, well, okay, you know, because that's what it's about. When we're dealing with these youngsters, you know, a lot of times, what I do is I try to make them take them steps with me. Okay, I'll pull my computer out right there. You want to do that? Let's look and find out. Listen, I have a program that I can go on that can show you how much a person doing any job in the world is getting paid last year, how much they made last year doing it. So I'll go on, let's see how much that job pays. Let's see how much this career usually does. Let's see what you have to do. Let's see what the prerequisites is for doing something like that. And now let's address it and see. Let's start knocking them off. Let's start checking them off. We got this done. Let's start checking it off. You'd be surprised at how much power that gives you when you start, because you in your own life know that. When you first started making decisions, you know what I mean, and you first accomplished, you know, I can remember getting my first set of books at my office. My son brought them to me. You know, my son is my king. You know, he's 30 years old. He's the one who actually helped save my life by actually telling me, hey, walk away. I'll give you a place. You can have it. I bought a place. I'll give it to you. just walk away. I'll give you a fresh start. So he is my king, you know, who is very, just every little itty-bitty goal that, you know, that you are happy about inside, but you don't think anybody else would be as happy about it. I tell you, he's right there on it, you know. And I remember when I first got my first box of books, he was the one who the books came to my house. He brought them to my office, you know, because he knew that would make my day. You know what I mean? And it was just that little accomplishment, the bookmarks. When we first got our first bookmark, we took a picture with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, it's the little thing. And every little step like that just pushes you to get another step, to take another step. You know, before I knew it, I looked up, you know, I had published a book. I was speaking somewhere, and I looked up, and somebody asked me, how long have you been sober? And I thought back and said, I've been sober for a year. And they said, wow, a year? And I realized how aggressive I had taken my life.
Right. You just, you know, you have to have goals and work. Once you start working towards those goals and you kind of put blinders on to everything else and you just keep going and you keep going and you keep going and you just, you know, one success after another success, and then you don't, not that you don't ever think about it, but you don't have time to deal with anything else other than what you're working towards.
That's right. You know, and even today, like, you know, I have other things that I'm trying to, you know, I'm working on some new goals right now, doing some bulk things right now. But I have set myself in such a pattern with my life, with my new life, on getting up, showing up every day for work, doing my job, you know, trying, you know, staying focused, that I have a challenge with getting sidetracked even for positive things, you know, because I'm so focused on doing things a particular routine, you know. And routine is something that, you know, you can have a good routine or a bad routine. I had a routine for doing drugs. Now I have a different routine, you know. So I don't get, now my routine is, you know, is to make sure that I'm the person that I'm to be, you know, that I'm an example for my children, you know, that I feel so good recently. My children showed up, matter of fact, last weekend and surprised me. This is just a wonderful feat. You know, we're the same children that I was estranged from for so many years, you know, that I was sleep Saturday, and my daughter flew from California and knocked on the door, you know, because she wanted to come in personally and hand me a clock that said, hey, I'm happy that you have nothing but time ahead of you, you know.
That's
so
awesome.
You know, so that was a big accomplishment for myself. This same daughter for many years would not even give me her address. You know what I mean? So that's a big accomplishment for me. But, you know, her and I talked about routine, and I was telling her, hey, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to do this different. I'm trying to, you know, do this thing with my books right now, but I just can't, you know, get right there to actually do it, you know, because I look up and it's a whole nother week has went by. She said, it's nothing wrong with that. It's because you're so focused right now that even any distraction, even if it's a good one, sometimes just doesn't fit in.
Right.
You know.
Now, we have a caller on the line with the area code of 414. We're going to just go to them for a minute and see if they have any questions or comments for us. Caller, you're on the line.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Just sitting back listening and enjoying the show.
Do you have any questions or comments for our guest, Cynthia?
Yeah, actually I do. Cynthia, I heard you use a statement in one of your sentences probably 5 minutes ago. You said on rare occasions. I know that you're writing a second book. Any idea when that's going to be done and coming out?
Yes. I'm actually planning to release the book in March, and the name of the book is On Rare Occasions. And I've kind of released a few things on Facebook about it. And the book has to do with how about a group of people who do think back on rare occasions about the paths and decisions that they made in life to become as successful as they are.
Okay. I just wanted to know when that book was coming.
Okay. Yeah, it should be out mid-March. That's when I plan to have it released.
Great. I read your first book and I really loved it.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, caller. I'm going to put you back on hold, and please stay with us for the rest of the show.
No problem.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit, too, about the – you developed a poetry program called Poetry in Motion. And tell us a little bit about that.
Poetry in Motion is a program, and I'll tell you that doors can always be open for us if we're knocking on different doors. And it's, you know, it's just my whole theory right now in life is that, you know, I knock on all doors. You know, it's something I want to do. I'm knocking on all doors. And so one of the things that I've always enjoyed was writing poetry. And so in knocking on doors, I always also had that little secret thing, you know, that I wanted to be a teacher. So just in knocking on doors, I knocked on the right door, and it opened me up to going into the school system. Because of my criminal background, to be straight up about it, because of my criminal background, I'm not able to go into the public school system, you know, quote unquote, and do any kind of program, no matter how positive it is. So, but there's always another door. So I go into the private school systems where the decision to let me in is a personal decision with the staff and not by any type of regulations. And I teach this program, Poetry in Motion, to third to fifth graders. And what I do is I take poetry and make it work for them, make it start moving. Because a lot of times to get a poem started, you got to get it moving. So what I do is I give them two words. And sometimes the two words are just one. And I assign a line to each person. Okay, you're line number 14, you're line number 12, you're line number 8. And I show them how we can get this poem to moving. And before the end of the class, and I tell them, you have to write something that's very personal about yourself on that one line. And I tell them, you know, hey, I'm an artist, and I'm going to design those lines into a very rhythmic poem. And most of the time I have the newspapers come and take pictures with us. So I make it a very exciting time for the children. And by the end of the day, I'm personal friends with these kids. They're emailing me, telling me their dreams, you know, sending me poetry from that point on, because they have gotten that poem inside of them in motion. And so that's why I call it Poetry in Motion. I've actually sold the program to a couple of teachers out in the Phoenix area and because it was just such a powerful, powerful program. And really, a lot of times, children, you don't know what children are facing at home. And you would be surprised at some of the lines these children put out, third to fifth graders. Mm-hmm.
No, I believe that. You know, we go out and talk to kids from elementary school up through high school, and you'd be surprised at some of the questions and comments that they make at the end of our speaking engagements.
Yes, it's just amazing. And I'll tell you, you know,
are you there?
Yeah, I accidentally hit a button. Okay, yes, I'm here. I do something else and hit a button. But, yes, I'm totally amazed with some of these children. When I come in, they're just like, you know, and I tell them what we're going to do. And I'm, oh, okay. But I go around and get them excited, you know. Hey, you know, your point, your line number 13, you don't have it yet? Oh, well, I'm not. Oh, yeah, we're going to do it. This isn't an option. We're doing it. We're going to do the best point. You know, and by the time the newspaper people get there, they're so amped up and they tell some of the most beautiful poetry. Matter of fact, I have a website called My Plate of Poetry, and that is where I display all the different poetry and motion classes that I do.
And what's the website for that?
That's My Poetry, My Plate of Poetry. And what I do is I also sell poetry plates. Yes, .com. And what I do is I sell poetry plates on there. And what it is it's, I have a little plate. I make these frames up, and I put these poems in there, and they're personalized poetry. So if you have a situation and you want a personalized poem, I do frame them and put them in different frames and send them out.
Well, that's awesome.
And so I sell the plates of poetry for $45 a plate. They're personalized, and they're guaranteed to be a one-of-a-kind.
That's awesome. See, another legitimate hustle. You can do anything, you know, get your little PayPal account and get going.
and get going. And that's what people, you know, and this is the year of, this is the time of technology. You know what I mean? Technology has taken us a long ways. You know, myself, I'm just even delving into more technology with the e-books and things. This is a whole different era for people who are writers. Just the way hip-hop came into the set and took over is the same way that urban literature, different, a lot of black authors, a lot of fiction authors, a lot of authors that people normally would never hear about because they are not with major publishing houses, are now able to do things that they normally could not have done.
Exactly. So you can easily do self-publishing now and market yourself everywhere, globally.
Yeah, globally, literally. I actually write myself. I didn't hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Ms. Cynthia. I was just saying it's time for a lot of people to understand the global hustle now.
Yeah, okay, it and it's strong. I write short stories for Angie's Diary also, which is a magazine in Amsterdam, you know, and on a totally different time frame than I am. You know, she emails me at 2 in the morning, you know, and it's 2 over there in the afternoon. So, you know, but I write for a magazine for Angie's Diary. Very, very good way to get your name out across the globe.
Wow. Well, we're glad to have you here in the Phoenix area. That's where we're at most of the time. And, you know, we've been trying to get together for over a month, I think, and we're both so busy we haven't been able to get together, but we will get together soon.
Yes, definitely, because I definitely want to get together with you. I know that we could definitely put together a very powerful program that could have a very powerful impact on youth and different ones here. I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm just going to have to put my nose to the grind and step outside of my box and put us together something so that we can make a strong impact in the Phoenix area, because that's what it's about.
Right.
I recently met some other people that were networking out here, Dr. Moorhead and some other people, and that's what's needed. We need to bond together and make an impact, because
Amen.
There's power in numbers.
Amen.
That's right.
And I say that all
together,
the time.
Together we can all do more.
Yeah, you're strong in numbers and you're strong in voice. And
a
quiet voice do not get heard. You know what I'm saying? And
that's right.
We have a loud voice out here, not only to let people know what's happening, but to my thing at the end of today, I like to help save lives at the end of the day, you know? So it's about just putting that message out there and touching these young people and old people's lives, because you got a lot of old heads out here that's still twisted too, you know? So we have to keep reaching at them as well, you know, and not just the youth, you know, it's just everybody. And, hey, Cynthia, when I say old heads, a lot of cats don't know what that be meaning, but you do.
I sure do, because I'm not no spring chicken, and I haven't been off the streets but about 3 years. So when you said old head, I was thinking you are not kidding, because something reached me a few years ago.
Hey, you know, don't too many cats say that, but cats in Detroit, though. You know what
okay.
I mean? Okay. Hey, when I bought my wife heard me say that, she said, what you talking about?
Oh, yeah. That's some of that OG stuff.
But what you talking about? I say, babe, I just, you know, I know I done changed my life from the street world, but I'm still me, you know what I mean? And the way I kick it sometimes on certain pages is just natural, you know what I mean? Truly on where I come from, you know?
Yes, I understand it 100%, because people, you know, are always amazed at, you know, my strength and my hustle, but they don't know where I'm from.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, they don't know where it all began, like they said. You don't know where it all started from.
Yeah, you know, they have no idea. I was actually just looking at, matter of fact, before the show today, I was just looking at a documentary about Detroit and about the Chambers brothers on TV.
Yeah, that's my boy BJ.
Okay.
BJ called me as soon as he got out, you know, and, you know, we kickers, you know, me and BJ did some business back in the old days, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was on our radio show last year when he got home.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can archive that and listen.
Yeah. All the old heads that be coming home be reaching out to me, you know?
See, that's good. That's good. That's good. Yeah, that's good. That is real good. Because
well,
they know it's a way
good
out.
If that's good, though, if everybody's trying to make the positive changes, you know?
Right.
Because there's still those that are going to come out and go right back in, you know?
That's right.
They're institutionalized after 20 years.
You got to pray for them as well, because a lot of them, you know, when you go in the prison system at 17 or 25 and you come out at 50 years old, yeah, I mean, that's all you know what I mean? So when you first went in the prison system, if you done killed 30 people, that's what the spot know you for, you know what I mean? But
that's right.
20 years done passed, and you come back out on the block, a lot of these youngsters don't know you for that, you know what I mean? So a lot of cats get caught up in that cycle, and they'd rather go right back to where they known at, and that's in the walls, you know what I mean? And I done seen a lot of my homeboys go back and forth, you know, because a lot of them left when they was young, and a lot of them 50, 53 now, 54, 48, you know what I mean? And nobody knows that part of your life, you know what I mean? Because these young cats is on a whole nother page that didn't know your era, you know? So I think that's something that the prison system truly have to do a lot of more working on. I know they have a lot of different programs like sending you to the halfway house, the tarpet house, and other little different programs they have inside the walls, but they really, really need to have a concrete program for, you know, that intervention back over into the world after a lot of, you know, guys and women done been locked up 20, 30 years, you know what I mean? That's a long stretch from being in freedom to behind the walls, because now that's all you know is behind the walls.
And you know what? I actually thought about that, and my daughter had talked and I had talked about that just recently, just over the past weekend. And we had talked about a program, about starting a program called Free Friends.
Yeah.
And a free friend would be a person who would take that person who had maybe been in prison for at least over 15 years. And when they got out and they were released to these halfway houses, a free friend would be someone like yourself or someone even like myself, who would go over there into this halfway house and take this person hand by hand and walk them back into society. You know, take them around with them. Let them ride with you to work. Let them go around some positive stuff so that as soon as they hit the streets, they're not looking for recognition from the old hood. They're looking to find their way in the new hood, which would be society.
Right, exactly. And that's what I say all the time, you know, because like I say, this is what I see. You know what I mean? Even from some of my old homeboys, you know, this is what I actually see. You know, that guys, because, you know, like I know, Cynthia, you know, whatever age you go in the penitentiary on, you stuck at 18, you know what I mean, even though you might be 45 years old, you know, you stuck at 18 if you're not getting educated up in the joint, if you're not taking the school classes, if you're not taking the college classes, and if you're just up there gang banging and doing all the shit up under the sun, you know, well, your mind is still at 18, you ain't advanced to 45. Just your number, say 45, you know? And that's another thing that I talk to some of these cats about, you know? I'd be like, damn, okay, you done did 15, 20 years. I say, did you get your GED? Did you take some college classes? No, man, you know, I was just doing me, you know? Okay, doing you, never look. Doing you is getting educated. That's doing you. You know what I mean? Because if you don't want to get educated and it's a free education behind the walls, guess what? They don't care whether you get educated or not, because they go home at the end of the day and they get their money on Friday. So they don't care if you sit in here and waste your life and go back out into the world uneducated, you know? So that's another thing that I express to a lot of guys. You know, when you're in the joint, man, go ahead and get that free education, man. Go ahead and get that free GED. Go ahead and get them free college classes. So when you come back out here to the world, you got to go through all that trying to get loans and all that, and you ain't going to get that out here. So ain't no sense in coming out here tripping. You know what I mean? Get it while you can. And that's another thing we got to continue to express with these, especially these young cats that's going in there now, because they think it's all about gang banging and trying to get some recognition. Man, don't you know? You might have killed, but there's other killers in there too. You ain't the only killer in the joint, man.
Yeah, that's why they in the joint too, because they kill us too.
Right. You know? You know what I'm saying? You ain't the only thugged out cat, man. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, they got a band for you. Yeah.
Right. You're in the spot with 2,500 people, man, and out that 2,500 people, I guarantee you, it's a lot of thugs within that 2,500.
Yes, and I think, and that's why I think it's important, because sometimes we can stop people when they go in. But one of my big things is that I want to help people when they come out, because sometimes you aren't able to stop them going in, you know.
Right,
and one of my big lessons that I always explain to people, because I find that sometimes people look down, you know, on people being addicts or different things like that. And I tell people, you know, that I didn't, you know, no one just wakes up one day and decides, you know, hey, I think, you know what, I think today when I get off work, I'm not going to go home. I'm going to go live down there in the streets homeless and be an addict. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave my office, and I'm going to take my jewelry off, and I'm just going to drop it on the ground and leave my car, and I'm going to walk downtown and live in a box. It's a process. So just like it's a process to get down there in the streets and become an addict, it's a process coming out. Just like it's a process for people who are in jail doing time, doing 20, 30 years, you know, it's a process that got them to that point to where they end up getting that time. There's also a process for them coming, because they took a process. They took a certain road that got them there. There's also a road to get you back, too. And when you're taking that bad road, see, there's always people who will help you go down the bad road. There's always someone who will take your hand and take you to the dope house. There's always someone who will ride with you and be your co-crime, be your crimey. You know, they might even snitch on you, but they will be your co-defendant. There's always somebody to hold your hand. There's always somebody.
Work, man. Didn't you say you get paid on Thursday, girl? My man waiting on us. Come on.
Okay. So there's somebody to see that takes your hand. So what we have to do once we have changed our lives, once we've been there, is that we have to realize that, recognize it, and then go to these halfway houses and also be that co-defendant that can help you go back up the street. You know, because I know somebody brought you down. It's a process of getting back up the street, too, you know. You wouldn't have walked down that street maybe if you didn't have somebody who, you know, the girlfriend had told you on Thursday, let's get paid and go down here. You might not have went down there if that girlfriend hadn't have been there to hold your hand and whisper in your ear and introduce you to the connection, who also made deals on the side when you were broke. You know, you might not have went there. So by the same token, you may not make it back into society if we don't have somebody here who's a free friend, who can also go and walk you back in here and say, hey, you know what? I know this lady over here, Cynthia Miller, you know, she runs an office over there, and she gives people a second chance. Here, let me take you over there and introduce you to her. And then the lady in the office says, hey, you know what? Hey, I know a place where you can go stay, a nice, clean, sober living home where you can go stay, who will let you stay there for free for a couple of weeks till you get on your feet. Hey, you know what? I got some clothes, too, that I bought that don't fit me. Hey, you want to go over here with me to a spoken word? Hey, let's go have a good time at the show. If you don't have somebody that can show you the way back in, it's just as hard, because you just get stuck. You get stuck on the wrong side.
Right, amen. You know, so that's without thinking. And like I said, we definitely appreciate you coming at the show, Cynthia, and we definitely appreciate all that you do to give back, and not only to help yourself but to help others. You know, we definitely appreciate all of that, and we definitely appreciate your comeback. You know what I mean? Far as, you know, coming from the lifestyle that you came from, and now you're standing on solid ground, letting the world know that you can change if you choose to change. So that's definitely a good look, sister, you know?
Thank you. I really enjoyed being on your show. I definitely want to hook up with you guys. We're both here in Phoenix. We're just doing so many different things. I definitely want to collaborate and put our power in numbers. And, you know, and who knows, next year we might just be on your show talking about our new program, Free Friends,
Amen.
You know.
That's right.
Hey, if you know, like my mama always taught me, don't say what God can't do. You better say what he can do. So
that's right.
Whatever God's will is, you know, so his will be done. You know what I'm saying? And we just thanking everything. But before we let you go, Miss Cynthia, we would like to ask you what kind of advice would you give not only the youth, but individuals that still out there addicted, you know what I mean, not only to drugs, it just might be addicted to a lot of different things that they shouldn't be addicted to. What advice would you break to them?
You know, I would let them know that myself, after spending 23 years, you know, in addiction, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, you know. And I say this every time someone asks me about this because I think it's important that people know that just the mere fact that you're listening right now, just the mere fact that you're reaching out to try to do something different, because you are if you're listening to a show like this. If you're listening to a show like this, if you've listened to me on any show, anytime you've listened, you know that this is what I say, then you're already taking steps to get out. You just have to recognize it and say, oh, okay, that was just a half a step. See, you can't, you know, people have the thing of saying, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, but it only works if you continue to do it. Because you can put one foot in front of the other and get stuck in that place, too, for about the next 5 years. But let's not do that. Let's just continue to put one foot in front of the other. It's a process. It's a process. Okay? It's a process. But what you got to do is just reach out a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. But it's consistency that will get you out. If you constantly, if I constantly get up every day, I know I'll constantly go to work. And I know that I'll constantly eat because I'm constantly going to work. And I know because I'm constantly eating and I'm constantly going to work that I constantly get a little farther. I'll be able to save a little more. I'll be able to take another jump. I'll meet some more people. I'll do some more things. See, it's a process, but you have to constantly do it. So treat whatever you're doing in life just like that bad place you're in. When you was getting to that bad place, it was one point you got, you were going down, and you were going to the tunnel that you slipped and went, phew, boy, you went about 10 feet at one time. So you got to just keep doing it constantly like that. You got to keep grabbing at things constantly, one right after the other. You'll have plenty of time to rest once you get out the tunnel. It's a whole bunch of soft chairs out here, and you're going to love it.
Amen. You know,
that's right.
So you can give them that website one more time. To go order that book, and we encourage everybody that's listening tonight to go and purchase that book and put that book on your shelf. So give them that one more time, Cynthia.
Okay, I'm going to give it to them one more time, and I'd like to give them this short poem real quick. It's about freedom, and it goes, close your eyes and come with me to my beautiful dream in the land of the free. Set your goals real, real high on top of my mountain where goals never die. Now reach in your pocket and take your time. Remove every form of money down to the last dime. Rub my stomach and give a great big smile. I'm about to conceive my dream's first free child. News of my birth will soar through Dreamtown of the first free baby born in beautiful brown. No one in my dream commits any crime. You see, we all were born free the very first time. Now those keys that you hear might wake you up in your bed, but I want you to know that my dream was not dead. One day my door, too, opened with a key, and I didn't have to close my eyes just to be free. My website is www.inrareformbook.com.
You feel me? That's all the way live.
Awesome.
You did, you heard what she said. Go cop that, the message and the short poem she just did on the spoken word was the bomb. You already know it's the bomb because your ears heard it like we did. You did? So cop that. And put that on your shelf. Follow Miss Miller on her website, tweet, Facebook, the whole nine yards. And let's start helping to save these lives, and let's start connecting our dots and our T's and doing the right thing out here, you know. So we appreciate all the fans that's been listening tonight, and we appreciate once again Miss Cynthia coming on the show, spreading her message and her powerful testimony. And we hope that it touched someone's life tonight, if not all. And with that being said and done, I'll pass the mic over to my missus and let her do the last announcements and give you information on what we have coming up as well.
Before I do the upcoming event, could you just let everybody know again about the cash reward we have for the murder of your brother in Detroit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a cash reward out for the murder of my little brother, Sidney Daniel. He was murdered October the 30th on Seabark Street on Detroit West Side, and that was my brother by my father. I had just met my brother this September 2011 for the very first time. He was 38 years old, and I'm 48 years old. We had never knew about each other until the passing of my father in March of 2011, and I found out that I had 12 brothers and sisters, and that blew me away. So that's still on my mind after learning all of that. And then my brother Sidney ended up getting killed in a drive-by shooting, which an incident happened that he had nothing to do with. So we definitely got the cash reward up for the persons or persons that bring the arrest of the individual or individuals that did that, and get that information to the Detroit Police ASAP. So we thank you for that.
Definitely. And do you have the number with you handy or not? I know you're on the road.
No, I don't have the number on me. But, yeah, you can just call the Detroit Police and, you know, give that information if you come across some information leading to the arrest of the individuals or persons that did that to my brother.
All right. And then we will be in Detroit February 22nd. We have a book signing at Harlem World Music and Video, and that's on 21700 Greenfield Road, Suite 107A, Oak Park, Michigan. And that'll be from 2 to 5 p.m. And then during the evening, we've also partnered with the United Communities of America and Pastor Ovella Andreas of the Christ Temple Apostolic Church there in Detroit. Each month she has a day of healing and trying to decrease crime in the city. And Rob will be a guest speaker at that event on the evening of February 22nd, I believe at 6 o'clock. And we'll post the date on our website here as soon as we get it. Those details are still in the works. And then in March, we will be in Atlanta, Georgia. We will be there at the Word on the Street 2nd Annual Literary Festival, and that'll be at the Underground Mall, 50 Upper Alabama Street, Atlanta, Georgia, and that's from 1 to 8 p.m. And we will also be speaking at a couple of schools out there. Details are still being worked on with that also. Anything else, Boyd?
We're asking everybody to log on to our website. If you have not became a member, log on to www.thestreetsdon'tloveyouback.neen.com and get involved with what we do to help the youths and others. And we have a lot of different groups on our website that you can get involved in as well. And we're asking you to also purchase that book, The Streets Don't Love You Back book as well. And my newest book, Never Hit a Woman, is about domestic violence towards women and kids and men and individuals. So we're just asking you to let's just get involved and help save some lives, you know. And if you don't know something, just ask, you know what I'm saying? And closed mouth definitely don't get fed. So let's stop being shy. Let's stop closing the curtain, you know what I mean? And let's stop getting involved in your neighborhood and stop my man from hanging out in front of your house with your pants hanging down, running up and down the street all day. So we have to go out, take over our neighborhoods back, and get all of that crud out the neighborhood, because you hiding behind the curtain and not being involved in your community, that's not helping your community at all. So let's stop that and let's get involved, you know. And that's basically what I have to say. And we thank everybody once again who rose with our movement. And I definitely would like to thank all my soldiers behind the prison gates that rolled with the movement, from the Fed to the state joint. And we got 50 state and Fed joints that the newsletter goes to, and I got a lot of soldiers in all of them. So we just want to say much love to all my soldiers and their family members as well, and all the Streets Don't Love You Back soldiers out here in the streets. So we send out much love.
And just one more thing, we did start, or we added to our The Streets Don't Love You Back clothesline. We now have sweatsuits, hoodies, pullovers, thermal shirts in different colors, red, white, and black, beanies, baseball caps, backpacks, and just various different things. So log on to the website, check out the new catalog, and we're going to continually be adding things little by little. And all the proceeds from all that just goes right back into our speaking engagements and different things that we do. We appreciate everybody's support on that. And once again, you can check that out at our website at thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. And we'd just like to thank everybody for joining us. And thank you, Cynthia. You were an awesome, fun guest to have on our show tonight and very informative. And we're just very happy that you were able to get through what you've gone through and to be able to share your story with everyone.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And
we will.
You like to do, Ms. Cynthia, any shout-outs to your family, your crew?
Yes, I would like to thank everyone who did listen in. And actually, my crew is any woman who is trying to get herself together. She can find me on Google. If you don't have Google, you can call me at 602-570-6526. And I'm definitely one of those free friends that are available that are willing to help you out. Okay, so
yes,
I definitely
yes.
want to say that. And I do want to thank the RSAT program for helping me get where I am.
Amen.
All right, we'd like to thank all those that called in and listened and all those in the chat room. It was a busy chat room tonight, a lot of women talking about different things, dealing with child abuse and such. So we appreciate all of our guests that weren't able to get in on the chat, but it stuck it out with us. And for all those that did, we appreciate you calling in. Please listen to us. We're on every Wednesday night, 11:30 Eastern Time, 8:30 Pacific Time. And, always something interesting with somebody, their real story. So please join us every Wednesday night, and thank you once again. We're going to go out with a song tonight called Guide Us and Protect Us by Rising Sun. Have a great week, and we'll see you back next Wednesday. And remember, the streets don't love you back.
Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray. Yeah, the one who is there when no one has a care, I say, Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray. Yeah, and lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way. Lord, how precious your love and your grace and your countenance. Your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. When enemies close all around, I will call your name. Yeah. And slaughter the weak, you quickly with no thought or shame, Lord. For my heart is firm in your hands, so I'm no disgrace. No, I'll hail up your name every day with a smiling face. Boy, I never can give in a praise to your tenderness, Lord. To be in your infinite grace is my happiness. Yeah, no matter the time or the place, you're omnipotent, Lord. You show me the cross, so I carry this. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice, so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.
Yeah, we tried the long rocky road.
Uh-huh.
The Buffalo soldier fights the power freedom war. The last day upon the throne, the conquering disciples from your congregation. Yeah,
yeah.
Collective security, we build a better nation. Time besides the unity. Say nothing and fight, nothing and war. But brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes. Live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering, see so much petty things, we're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love. So I will always strive to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.